everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cocoa Talk podcast. Today's podcast is a part of the Mana Wahine series where Ashley is joining me all the way from Aotearoa. So we've been having a chat in the back end of the interwebs of the internet and just sharing time and space and sharing our story. And I was so moved by what you shared, Ashley, about your life and everything you've experienced so far that I thought, why not come on here? You get an opportunity to share your truth, your story, and then, you know, also speaking about a business, you know, this beautiful business that you're part of with two other wahine, Noku, which is a clothing business. But yeah, morena, welcome, and just take the time to introduce yourself, who you are, and where your story starts.
Morena kia tātou, ngā mihi no kia koe nes, mō tēnei kaupapa, kaupapa mana wahine, kaupapa whakaaro me ngā kōrero hoki. Ko Ashley Kemperhau, he uri o mātātua horauta me Tākiti me waka. E noho ana no Mōteo i konei. I roto i te rohe o Kahununu. Kia ora tātou. Morena, everybody. A little bit, well, not nervous, but open to what's happening here in this space of Ness. Thank you, Ness, for inviting me onto your platform. I hail from the lovely waka of Mātātua, Takitimu and Horauta. So I'm a bit of everything, I suppose, coasty and a bit of bush in there as well. But yeah, so just happy to join you in this space today and just conversate and see where we go.
Did you want to, what was your, I guess, your childhood like, or what was it like for little Ashley growing up in this wonderful wild world that we live in?
So little Ashley, man, where to start? So I was brought up in an army base. Both my parents were in the force. My dad was a sergeant major, and my mum was a truck driver, so I sort of went between base to base, so Linton, Trentham, Burnham, sort of lived my life rolling with my parents. Moved down to Christchurch, mum left the force, dad spent a lot of time overseas for majority of my childhood, from the years of maybe 4 to 10, dad served in East Timor. So I didn't really have much to do with dad while he was overseas and serving, but live with mum was all good. They sort of split up when I was younger, and then sort of travelled around, hopped between Christchurch and the Hawke's Bay, living with my grandparents and then moving back with my mum. When dad finished serving in the army, I spent some time with him in Palmerston North, and yeah, just things were pretty great, but they were also pretty unstable, if that makes sense. I didn't have the perfect mum and dad at home, and given all these opportunities, but I never sort of let that weigh me down. I sort of took the experiences of moving between spaces as opportunities in themselves, and spaces to learn and grow and add that to my little kitty as I was growing older. Kind of hit my teen years, and I don't know what happened, but I sort of rebelled and went all sorts of spaces, just not really wanting to listen or conform. I just wanted to live and do things as I sort of felt. And then ended up getting pregnant with my first baby at 19. And didn't stay with her father, so it was just me and her, and she was like my little sidekick for a good year, and it was just me and her, and we just kind of did what we liked and just sort of lived life on the edge almost. And then I met my husband now, but partner at the time, when she was about 1.5. So he kind of came into our lives, and that was kind of awkward too, because, you know, like, how do you integrate with a baby and a new partner, and he didn't have any kids. And so we ended up early on having a pretty frank discussion about that, because I was sort of like, oh, you know, with me comes her and she's my priority, and if that doesn't work for you, then it's probably not going to work for us. But I can happily say 9 years down the track and, hey, we're married and got a couple of extra kids.
And how's, man, I could not even imagine having like a blended family like I have, but it's so normal, you know, especially in, I don't know, in my family, it's very normal for, you know, you have a child here and then you have a child there and pick up a few kids along the way. And that sounds really bad, but it's, I don't know, it works out because someone is receiving that mama and her children to say, cool, I'm happy to have all of you, even if it means, you know, you already have children and then they start to create a family of their own. I'm in awe of whanaus that, you know, not only solo parents, but then blended families as well. How's that been to like navigate, you know, like you're bringing, I guess, a whole new life, something you've already experienced before, and then to come in and then like start afresh as well?
I suppose with anything, the unknown is exactly that, it's unknown. For us, we just kind of took it as it came. Not everything was, you know, pretty and happy. You know, there's many a times we've had to give each other space to just sort of feel out how we're feeling at the time with the situation. I mean, I didn't have a very good co-parenting agreement with my oldest's father. So basically my husband took her on as totally his own and pretty much raised her. So when, you know, her biological father popped in and out, it became quite difficult to navigate that space, because for somewhat of me, I felt some sort of obligation to have to give him an opportunity to get to know her. And then on the other part of me, I was like, well, no, you kind of got up and left and you don't deserve this chance. So yeah, those spaces were quite hard to navigate. Him, on the other hand, in terms of raising her, he's done a beautiful job. You know, like, I can't fault that for someone who kind of jumped in the deep end. He's just been her rock, you know, and they have a beautiful relationship. And she doesn't see him any other way. So I'm quite blessed in that fact, because not every blended whānau works out just as well as ours has. But yeah, no, it's been a rocky road at times, but it's kind of made us stronger as a whānau unit. Yeah, and our babies, you know, they know no different either. They know that she goes for holidays with her other whānau. Sometimes they want to go with, and I'm like, no, that's not me. But, you know, it's quite nice to know that they conversate with our babies as well. And it's becoming pretty functional between the three lots of us.
What's functional? I don't even know what that means. What is that?
I suppose in comparison to how it was when we didn't speak, it would just be like so distant, it wasn't funny. Then this is functional for us, you know, in terms of being able to conversate and say, yes, okay, you can pick her up from school and ring each other up on the telephone and be like, hey, I want to see her. Yeah, okay, that works. Yeah, functionals are really, that's a difficult word to put into context.
I think one thing you've spoken to is how families now, they don't exist like they used to. You know, it was like mother and father, children, like there was no such thing as like, and then we're going to have a divorce and separate, and then women get to decide if they want to stay with them or not. And like just sharing that it's okay, you know, like it's acceptable, like it should be acceptable that it's okay that we're moving this way, that we get to choose a life that we want. And if it means, you know, moving away from someone to then find someone else, even though you have beautiful children, you know, on your back, that it's okay.
Yeah, it's I always questioned it as a kid. So you know, like I would always ask Dad, you know, when Mum and Dad separated, and as I got older and sort of was more aware of the situation, I was sort of like, well, why did you leave Mum? You know, that's not in my brain, that doesn't work, that's not what I've been taught. And how come you love this other lady, you know? And to be fair, my stepmom, she's amazing. She's taught me quite a lot growing up. And so I respect her fully. But, you know, like in those stages as a child, you don't know any better. So you're asking all these really intense questions that I think now that I look back and now that I'm a parent, I'd have trouble answering those questions myself. So, you know, nothing was as what I was taught, and it wasn't taught from my parents clearly, but it was taught in my education space and the things that I watched and engaged in on TV and how things are supposed to work. So there's like this idealistic thing in your brain that, you know, you need to have a mum and a dad and it needs to be all happy and they're not supposed to fight and they can't fall in love with other people. But, you know, as sort of time goes on and you live your life, you kind of learn and then you reflect. Well, I know I do. Some people don't reflect, but I've reflected on my life and sort of thought, oh, wow, okay, that's really different. And now I know why it's different and that it is actually normal. It's not weird. Yeah, because I used to give my dad quite a bit of stick and be like, that's weird. Why would you do that? And him not being able to answer that, I suppose, left questions. But yeah, as I've grown, you sort of learn those things through life experience, I suppose.
Yeah, kudos to you. Hats off to you for like making all of that work. Yeah, I can barely like function with one partner in 3 years.
Oh, you know what? You know, it's quite funny because it sort of makes me think, you know, what my kids are watching on things like, because we didn't have YouTube back in the day, but things that they're watching on YouTube and what questions that they ask me about relationships and the impact that social media and TikTok and YouTube have on our kids today, you know, this idealism of what life is supposed to be like. And no, you don't have to record everything. Like, you know, my kid's going through a phase at the moment where she needs to record herself eating because there's like this ASMR thing happening. I'm like, no, you know, you eat your kai. You don't need to record yourself eating your kai. But there's this idealism for her that, oh yeah, that's how I'm gonna live my life, is recording myself eating in every moment of my day. Yeah, so it just makes me think about things like that, I suppose.
I was having a conversation with a friend last week and we were just talking about, because we both have sort of teen-ish kids, and how scary it is. Not it must be scary for them to navigate, but as parents, because we didn't have what they have now. And can you imagine if we had social media at 16? Like, I would have no friends. I would, like, be a bum somewhere because of the shit that I did. Like, people are like, I don't want to associate with that girl. Like, bro, she's fucked. But just how hard it is as a parent to know how much to give the freedom, how much to put in boundaries, how often do they need to make mistakes. But just how much of a rabbit hole the internet is. Like, one word can just go down a rabbit hole and then all of a sudden it's like porn. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you just don't know where the internet is going to take them. And how hard it is to teach a child critical thinking.
Very much so. Like, I mean, so my daughter, she's 10, nearly 11. And she, yeah, like TikTok and recording yourself and things like that. And then I said to her, look, I'm going to cut down your device time. So I really don't know what you're searching on the internet. And she was like, oh, why? My friends don't have device time. I said, well, in this house you do, and it is only for an hour, and you will not be on YouTube, you know, and sort of like monitoring that space. But it was quite funny. So a friend of mine who sometimes often has my kids, she's like, I'm astounded that your kids like to play outside. I'm like, huh? And she goes, no, like they actually can go out there and use their imagination and have a great time, and they're laughing. I said, isn't that what all kids do? She's like, no, mine likes to sit inside and play on the iPad or watch TV. And I'm like, oh no, we can't do that in our household. Like, I just could not, I wouldn't be doing my kids justice if I allowed that. Yeah, so it was quite interesting having that conversation with my friend, and how that works in our household compared to others. I just thought everyone's kids played outside, and that's just what they did. Mainly because that's how I was brought up. I was always booted outside.
There was not that there's nothing else to do, but same sort of thing. We didn't really have much like adult supervision, so the kids were left to kind of fend for themselves. And so you just do some wild shit when your kid's outside, like crazy adventures. Like your imagination was wild, like it was fun. I kind of feel a little bit like a mama, a little bit sad for my kids that they don't get to have like that real cousin experience that I had. Well, we did like some pretty dangerous shit, but you know, we're all good now. We made it out alive. But it gives you like a bit of resilience, and it kind of teaches you to play with the edge of like danger, and so, if that makes sense, you know? Yeah.
Definitely. Like, I mean, it sort of brought something up for me as well. Like, I suppose working in the health sector, I was exposed to a few things that most parents wouldn't be exposed to. But when TikTok came around, there was a notice that was put out, and I read it, and it was saying that to monitor your children on TikTok because there's things that will trigger suicidal thoughts. And it kind of hit me, and I was like, oh. So ended up having this really in-depth discussion with my 10-year-old around why the safety on the internet is so paramount for mama, where it comes from, not why it scares me, but why it impacts me in the way that it does. And it was interesting because for a 10-year-old, I didn't want to overload her small little mind with stuff that's probably my own, but just really wicked, you know, like how quickly things get out there and the impact of what happens with our young people, and how much they take that stuff on board. Like, it is shit, it's bullshit, but they take it on board and they take it so personally, and it's just kind of like, oh fuck, okay. To be having these conversations with your 10-year-old, like, we were never told about depression, suicide, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't that it was taboo for my mum, but it wasn't a prominent thing in the rangatahi space as it is now. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like, fuck, am I really having this discussion with my 10-year-old, you know, about what she's watching, and if she feels like something bad is happening that she needs to talk to me, and then we can process it. But I just think that, yeah, all that sort of stuff, it just exposes your kids to so much that you have no control over. Mm. And I just sort of, yeah, it frightens me more than anything.
I think also on the flip side, like, I'm just thinking about it now, it can kind of give us as parents an opportunity to have these open conversations because it was never spoken about before. So even though it's coming about the most like oddest way, that even though they've been exposed to so much, we kind of feel the need to jump in it and like get in there quickly before someone else is telling us, or the other, you know, the world is telling them like, this is how we need to live or speak, or we were girlfriend.
Oh, what happened? You're back. I don't know what happened.
All good. Ashley, we've been talking a little bit about your brother. Hey, in the back.
And, yeah,
you wanted to speak about that and share about that.
Yes. So my brother, I've grown up with him since we were about roughly 14, from memory. I could have been about 15. He was older than me anyway. And he was always up to no good. He's not my biological brother by any means. Over time, we grew quite a tight bond. And then from that point on, he was definitely my brother. You know, the type that would just turn up to your house and just lie on your couch and go to sleep, or help himself in the fridge, in the cupboard. And I'm kind of like, okay, whatever floats your boat. And then as we kind of progressed into our teenage years, I don't know what was going on with me at the time, but I was working as a barmaid in a club and he was the bouncer on the door. So we actually ended up flatting together for a little bit there. But as annoying as brothers are, they hit on all your friends. They take all your friends' phone numbers. And I'm like, can you just fuck off? Like, can you not? And just grew that really tight friendship that if I was going through some shit, I could run to him and cry my eyes out. He'll go, are you finished? Are you good now? Okay, can you get out? And sort of just had that tight, close bond. Anything he ever needed, including my car, my wallet. it was just a thing, you know. He'd come over and go, can I have your keys? I'm like, okay. But that was kind of how it grew. And funnily enough, he was my husband's really good mate since the age of like 7, from memory. They met each other at the river and he sort of said to my husband, oh, we're going to be best mates. And then that's how that happened. So he was very domineering at the best of times. But for my brother, he, like, in my mind and how I felt was that he was quite a strong being. He was quite like, even in stature, he was quite broad, he was huge, and it was like he could take on the world and nothing would faze him. As it so happens, he didn't live out the rest of his life. At the age of 30, he decided that was his time and he decided to leave the earth and take his life. Which kind of, it stunned me. It stunned me just because of my, in my mind of what I thought of him and in my mind of what other people had seen of him. You know, he was the biggest, baddest guy. You know, you couldn't really mess with him. But it just shows that underneath all of that was just a man who was yearning for whatever. I'll never have answers for that. But, you know, he was clearly yearning for something. And... yeah, it's hard to process the grief that comes with suicide, that comes with, you know, that of self-harm even. People in their minds, they just, it's hard to process. It's hard to figure that out. And I suppose in terms of me, it's been part of my own journey. Just in everything that I've done since that day, I've not done anything without intention. I've not had ill intentions of anybody. I've been more aware of my surroundings and how I'm feeling and how others around me are feeling. It's just opened a whole new door. I sort of, yeah, feel like I'm rambling now, but yeah.
I think grief, like, nothing can quite prepare you for grief, but I think growing up Māori and like attending so many tangi, there kind of is some sort of preparation in some way where you know that there's a space to grieve, you know that there's a space to wānanga with other people, you know there's a space to share stories. But when it comes to taking your own life, that's where it's very, it's confusing. Like I found it quite confusing, you know, the tangis where I went to where they're taking their own life, I was like, cool, like they're not here, but like it just feels odd in my body. Like I'm not sure how you're supposed to grieve, even though we've been given some sort of process that it, you know, and then it starts like this and then we move to this part and this part. But I think the uncomfortable thing was not having answers, hey, just yeah, not being able to communicate in some way. And how's that part been for you where you've been able to process the non-communication or no answers?
It's been hard, hey. Like I found myself reading fucking internet articles about suicide hoping that I was going to get some sort of answer in my mind or clarity on how I can fix the next person, for want of a better term. But it was sort of like I went from like a naivety when it came to grief around, when it comes to tangihana for our older people and our kaumātua and our kuia, you know, a lot of people like in the speeches on the paipai and things like that, you know, they talk about the life that they've lived and how incredible it is and, you know, the legacy that they've left behind and things like that. But this tangihana was very different. He lived some life. Yes, it was amazing for the time that he was here, and he's impacted so many people. But the part that was struggling is that I was grieving for him, but I wasn't finished yet. The story wasn't finished yet. So that was the part I struggled with. And reading articles, the academic side of me thought that that was going to get some sort of fucking answer. But it didn't. And it sat with me, and it was quite a heavy feeling. And I went from a person that knew what grief was in a time that you were ready for it, but then knowing what grief was at a time that you completely have no idea of the time, you're not ready for that. It catches you out of the blue. And it's such an inconsolable space because there's so many questions that come with it. So I suppose I'm kind of grateful, because at the time that this sort of happened, he passed away in August, I sort of leant on my cousin, and she guided me to a space of Māori movement, which is run by an amazing tāne called Ngāri Noa. And he came down to Koununu. Something was calling him here, and that was amazing, and I'm glad he did. Because I walked into those doors and I wanted answers, but I left that wānanga knowing that he hasn't left me. He's just in another space. So I was kind of like, oh, I feel better about that. and I wasn't in a space of confusion anymore. I was kind of like, oh, okay, his tinana just needed to be, and he needed to be set free. And so, yeah, just understanding that, but it gave me a chance to understand myself in that space as well, and understanding that the erratic things that I was doing wasn't because I was losing the plot, it was just because I missed him, and I inconsolably missed him. To have someone that's, you know, in your space every day, lived with you when you were overseas, you thought you were running away from him and he found you, you know, turns up on your doorstep and he still wants to use your car, which means nothing's changed. We were living in Coomera in the Gold Coast at the time, and he literally turned up on the doorstep, and I was like, oh, where did you come from? And he goes, oh, I just flew in the other day. I went, okay. And he goes, oh, but I need your car. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, what do you need it for? I'm going to go pick up this chick. I'm like, oh, righto. Amazing. Just to, you know, reflect on those memories and want them back. You know, you want him to turn up on your doorstep, and you want him to need your vehicle or need a feed or just need to be in your space. So, yeah, I suppose the processing for that, it's still a journey on its own. I still get emotional about it. I still want him to turn up. But I'm just learning to function, for want of a better term, and grow and move around it, and just be aware, you know, it's sort of opened my eyes to the mental health statistics at the moment. And they don't seem to be getting any better by any means. So it's sort of like, oh, okay, this is where we're at. And why didn't I notice this before? But yeah, it's just when you're in it, when you're exposed to it, and when you've lived it, you all of a sudden see this whole new other perspective of life, of people, of poverty, of value, and that of our men. You know, they're put out there to be so strong, and they need to work hard and be providers. And when that can't happen, something in their DNA is like, oh, shit, I'm not cracking it. And us wahine, you know, we sometimes have a habit of putting that on them as well. So it's just opened my eyes to a whole lot of things, and just knowing that it's not anyone's responsibility to validate the other, but also to be aware of sort of where other people are at. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, bro, you're spitting some truth this morning. It's too early, bro.
Sorry, guys.
No, it's I think this movement around, like, especially around the feminist movement, manawahine, you know, let's like hold ourselves and boundaries. It's beautiful, like, it's incredible, and we're moving. But then we're also, just the conversation that I've been hearing, it's, we're also shitting on our men and just kind of leaving them behind, and like, you guys need to pull your bootstraps up and we're not waiting for you and it's all your fault. And I understand too, you know, I truly come from a place of understanding, but as a mother to three boys and I have a beautiful husband, why the fuck would I want to allow that kōrero into my mind, knowing that they're also the future, you know? And it's, I think a big lesson for me was, well, Vanessa, maybe you've got some things that you need to sort out yourself first so that you can hold your tāne better, so that you can hold your boys better, you know, in some way, so that you can, like, for me to soften and to be more like nurturing and caring, because that's not like a strong asset of mine, that I had to really soften into that part of myself, so that my whānau felt safe to also share their feelings and to soften, and I'm not just like, oi, stop crying, or harden up, or this or that, you know? Like, I think we can be part of the solution together. Bro, it sounds like I'm trying to, like, create world peace or something, but honest, I am.
I think what's happened is, don't get me wrong, I feel like the movement that our wahine are going through at the moment is amazing. You know, power to us in terms of equitable outcomes. But what I have been seeing is just the misconception that in order to get equitable outcomes, we need to stand on the back of a man. And I'm like, no, I'm not okay with that. You know, like, I'm not okay for our tāne to cop something that, you know, it's historical trauma that they're living today. It's not something that is anyone's fault, but we've been conditioned the way that we are in this time to be this way, you know. It's funny, we're learning about at the moment in terms of whakapapa around our ikura as women, and I remember us conversating at the time the other week that about Ngahuia Murphy's podcast, and I think it's beautiful, you know, we're going through these amazing findings of ourselves and of our whakapapa. But our men back in the day, you know, it was never a paru thing to just love your wahine during their time and their space, because they understood that that was whakapapa. But our wahine also understood that our tāne helped create our whakapapa line. That's just how it works. Without our men, we won't exist. And in terms of, you know, like, if we went Eo and our atua Māori, you know, we learn about our tāne atua, but what we do know is that there were wahine atua as well, because they needed both of us, and tāne needed hine ahumoni in order to create life. So I just feel like there's that huge misconception that in order to be of mana, you need to whakaiti someone else to stand up and hold your truth, and that's not the case. You can always, everyone has their own mana, wahine have their own mana. How that looks for someone and how that feels for someone is for nobody else to judge. You know, like, we get into this mean judgment space, like, in order to be a mana tāne, you need to be matatau te reo Māori. Kei te he. We've just spent, you know, like, the last 100-odd years learning how to speak English and being told we've got to speak English. So, you know, Kyle, kei te he. You don't have to be matatau te reo in order to have mana. Yeah, to have mana is just to be yourself. You know, the mana of a wahine is to create life, and the mana of a tāne is to help that process. So, yeah, it astounds me that this whole being of mana means you need to do X, Y, and Z, or you need to have a particular status of some sort, I don't know what. But I'm just kind of like, nah, that's mamai. And we're just creating our next generations, a lot of intergenerational trauma. But we're doing it to each other, you know. We're doing it to other Māori. And it just puts us in that space, especially on social media platforms, when we can't get it together And we're calling each other out instead of doing things the our Māori way, kanohi ki te kanohi. You're just opening us up to those Pākehā that have been judging us this whole time. They're going to go, oh, look, there's those Māori again. They can't get it together. They're too busy fighting with each other. And I'm like, does anyone else see what's happening here? You know, like, yeah, okay, you're trying to hold some accountability to people, but you're creating mamai in amongst it all.
Mm.
It hurts. It really does, especially in a social media platform, because things get screwed up. You get a misconception of something. Other people jump on a bandwagon. Then they fuck it to you. Then you start hearing it, thinking it. And next thing you know, we're in that cycle of depression, of mental health issues, based on what? Somebody's 5-cent opinion of who you are without actually knowing you properly. So I don't know. I think in some ways, wanting good outcomes for yourself, for your people, it's amazing, but you don't need a takahi on anybody to get there. You just stand in who you are and just help people and be genuine about it. I don't know. Sorry, that just I'm quite passionate about that space because I feel it happens a lot. And I've been a receiver of stuff like that, and being challenged in terms of what my whakaaro is around manatāne. And I'm like, just to be himself, okay? Nobody is perfect. No one is holier than thou. We all have shit. We're all growing. We're all learning. But what he was yesterday isn't what he is today, or what I am now wasn't who I was 3 years ago. And just understanding that pathway.
I think that's another hard part of navigating social media as older people, even though we're like in our 30s, but like older. Bro, I feel old when there's all these like 10-year-olds using the thing faster than me. But just how easy it is for someone to come into your home or into your space and into your page and spill their noise out onto you with only a small amount of context to then believe it is the truth, not understanding the effect that it's having on the other person. And I think it's, we can get, when we're like, just speak your truth, you know, if it's your truth, then that's all that matters. And I'm like, oh, fuck up. But it's something that I say, you know, I always say, speak your truth, but at what cost? And it's how we're speaking it, I think, is the problem. Like you were mentioning before, we've lost the ability or the art of kanohi ki te kanohi, for also, you know, COVID, that's made things difficult. But also, why are we having a conversation with someone on the other side of the world who we have no fucking idea what their life is like behind, and we want to allow it to fill us with so much like hate and like entitlement and screenshotting and attaching to this person and then sending it to someone else's DM? I always say it's like bringing, you have this idea or this belief, and then you're trying to just gather troops, you know, to make your belief feel like it's alive and like creating like this living, breathing organism, when it's just a bunch of fucking noise. Yet the other person receiving that, I can't even imagine, like it's something that I've never received. But I can't imagine what that must be like, you know, especially if our young people, and you're talking about statistics before and mental health, they are actually killing themselves. They are really spiraling down. And then how do we move past this? You know, how do we continue to create like a stronger community rather than talking shit? Literally, that's all it is. You're just talking shit and then you're believing it.
1,000%. You know, my situation was, you know, completely different, but well, not completely, it's somewhat the same, but you know, in order to feel validated of whatever, you know, it needed to come out on social media and it needed to have X, Y, and Z have an opinion on it. And you know, no crimes at all. You're so entitled to your opinion and you're so entitled to feel the way you're feeling, and you're validated in that fact. You know, that's how you feel. No one can tell you, nah, that's not how you're feeling. But then to put it out on a social media platform and just go to damn town, I'm like, bro, because what it does is how you're feeling, okay, there's mamai there, but when it comes out on a social media space, the kupu that you use is taken to a whole nother level. You know, people just take parts of words or parts of a sentence and go, oh, created this story in their head and gone, oh yeah, that's what she did, without any context whatsoever. It kind of got to a point for me where I was approached on the street. Like, I was out with my husband and friends and I was approached on the street. And she basically, and this is me making an assumption, she could have been a Pākehā person by the way that she spoke and how she interacted with me. But it came across as, you're a disgrace to anyone who's Māori and you need to get that kauai removed off your face. And I'm thinking to myself, holy fuck, is this really happening? And I was, no shit, I was so gobsmacked and just standing frozen that my husband ended up walking over and this lady just took off real quick. And I was like, fuck. And my husband's like, hey, are you okay? Like, come back to the space, because I was just standing there. And I sort of was like, yeah, no, I'm okay. It's all right. It's okay. And I sort of brushed it off. And then for the better part of me, I was like, oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to get drunk and it'll be all right. I'll forget about it and I'll deal with it tomorrow. Jokes. I so didn't forget about it. And it played on my mind because Māori are who I stand for. I am Māori. Everything about me, the way I move, what I do, the drive behind my kaupapa, my business, is for Māori. And for her to kind of come into that space and give me her two-cent opinion, I allowed that to kind of take over me. And it sat in my subconscious space all night. And I got so hammered that I went home and I tried to tap out my own self. Just because whatever was caused on social media affected me physically in a space that I had thought that I was safe. And I was like, fuck. If people think it's all good to just walk up to you, not know you from a bar of soap, and give their two-cent opinion, and if this is happening to me, and I like to think of myself not as a nobody, but, you know, like, I'm no one of influence on social media, but she knew who I was, she knew who I looked like, or what I looked like, and then invaded my space without permission. And I was like, fuck, this is wicked. Nah, I don't want to be here, I don't want to deal with this. And tried to tap out, called out to my brother, like, please just take me. I can't deal with this shit. I stand for so much good for our people. And if I'm not doing that, well, then why the fuck am I here? You know, for my husband, for my kids, for my next generation, for my mokopuna, you know, that's how far ahead I was thinking. That I was like, oh, no, I fucked it all up. Just take me. But, yeah, it was just sort of like a whirlwind for someone to feel of mana, speak her truth, which she is so allowed to do. But if you're going to shit on someone to get there, then, man, that's saying a lot, you know. Even in that space, I said nothing about this person. I kept my mouth shut because she was allowed to feel the way she was. Nah, how she did it wasn't right. So, yeah, I suppose it just kind of opens you up to all of those things, and then you think about it in a bigger context and it's like, fuck, you know, people are going through this on the regular, and then we ask ourselves about health statistics and I'm like, oh yeah, no, fuck, like, the social determinants of health are the reason why our health statistics are so shit. So I don't know, yeah, that was my whakaaro on that sort of stuff. I feel like our mana wahine space can sometimes be a bit, not dangerous, I don't think that's the term to use, but without truth, without love, walking in the space of love and understanding, then we get screwed up in other stuff, in other shit.
It's like we're all charging forward, which is beautiful, but then as we're running forward, we're also like standing on people rather than like dodging them.
Yeah, or just loving them, eh? Because everyone's got their own shit and they act in the conscious space due to stuff that's happened in their past that they might not be aware of, but that's how they bring it out in their conscious space, and just love them and understand it. Because I suppose for me, that's where I came from during that time. I wasn't loving on myself, clearly, but I was loving of her and understanding that, oh, you know, that didn't come from a place of hate. It came from a place of hurt. Yeah. And then I just sort of went, you know what? It's okay. At some point, we're going to cross paths again. At some point, we're going to have that harder conversation. When things are settled, when things are calm, and just love each other, you know. Shit happens for a reason. And clearly for me, it was just so that I don't know, I had a lot of lessons to learn in that space.
Yeah, just strong to even, not even the word strong, like resilient, open-minded, like to be able to handle a situation like that. I don't know if I could. I think I would have popped off, which I have in the past, and that didn't turn out so well. But you know, I think we are given, especially when we start to, you know, we receive our kowai, the opportunities that we are given to possibly mirror something in us that we can be again resilient towards. You know, some of us are met with heaps of love, and that's really uncomfortable, you know, where they're like, you're so beautiful, and you're like, ah, that's too much. And then some of us receive the opposite end, you know, and then how do we handle that situation? Yeah, I think even in that, you've spoken to what it means to wear moko kowai for yourself and how you've chosen to hold yourself, you know, not only as like a higher self, but also as human. Like sometimes we make decisions. We're like, this is fuck. This sucks. This hurts. And I'm going to choose something to make it go away a little bit. But that's the truth. You know, it's not smooth sailing sometimes.
Oh shit, no, not at all. My kowai, you know, her name is Waiora, and damn, like when I heard her name and when I was gifted her name, that kind of sat with me, you know, healing waters, waters of health, waters of order, whatever that looks like for a person. But for me, my healing space is the Wai. I named my daughter Te Wairere, which is the waterfall or flow of life. I birthed her in the water. So clearly there's something sticking around for that. But in terms of who I am, when I had the conversation with my kaitā, my tohunga, he kind of took into account that all I want for our people is to be ora, to be pai. And it resonates through what I do in terms of holding space for people, in terms of the mahi I do within the DHB, even with my clothing line, you know, is to project aura, to project wellness, to project being able to own who you are and be completely 1,000% okay with that. And yeah, she's pretty special to me. And the markings, you know, her tohu in there, you know, hold that I'm the eldest daughter, I'm the eldest grandchild. Talks a little bit about my whakapapa, and my name, my Māori name is Mihi Ki Te Ao, which is greetings to our world. And just being able to speak truth. And for years I didn't know what that meant. I was like, I don't speak no truth, like up to but now in my adult self I'm like, oh yeah, no, fuck yeah, you know, that's some truth, you know. Nah, I'm not okay with that. I want our people to be well. They're not well right now. No, I'm not going to barricade someone or stonewall anybody that's trying to help our people. Rather I'm going to find a, you know, a compromise or work together, because within unity becomes, you know, health. But yeah, she's been a journey, and my brother's actually on there underneath my rangatira, who I'm named after. She actually, mihi ki te ao, there's only three of us in Tūhoe. There's myself, another wahine, and the lady we're named after has quite a lot of uri within Tūhoe. She's got four lines. One of the lines is the whānau black line, who is Ōtere Black, the rugby player, but also Whirimako, who's the singer. That's her line. And my line is the Tihima line, which is the first husband. So there's quite a bit there. And to reassure my husband, I was like, no, I'm not going to go and find four husbands. And you know, just to reassure you, I'm named after her. I'm not going to follow in her footsteps. Because he sort of looked at my name and went, hey. But yeah, just, you know, understanding my whakapapa, understanding who I am. It's come with the journey of losing my brother, ironically. Found myself in amongst finding solace. So yeah, it's incredible to have your kauai, to bring her out into Te Ao Marama, to wear her with pride in a time that we're so going through some really hard change as Māori people within Aotearoa. And to work in a space that's highly colonised, like the DHB, and to walk through that hospital and through those corporate spaces, proud to be who I am, proud to be Māori, and be okay with the confrontation that comes with that. And it's just the lack of understanding more than anything. So it's been a journey having a kauai, and I feel like she keeps me sane sometimes. And that I'm on the right track. Sometimes I might look a bit crooked, but you kind of get to the destination and go, oh yeah, no, fuck, that was for a reason. She's beautiful.
And just the way, man, I'm writing so many notes just for myself to do some homework. But just a couple of things I wrote down was, one of them was this, we're kind of going back, but just like validating ourselves around social media, like using that as a platform to be validated, even if the kōrero is mamai, even though it's harmful to other people. I loved how you said invading my space without permission, so that wahine coming into your space without permission, and then shitting on other people to get there. I loved how you said projecting yourself. So sometimes we say like, just be yourself. And I think being is enough, but I love that how you said project, like almost let your being come out of you and share that with the rest of the world. And I loved when you said unity brings us health. I was like, oh, shit, that is money. Because when we are so fragmented as a community, when we are apart, that is when we start to not fall apart, but we start to unravel, you know, our mental health and the feeling of a belonging and being a part of something. It's not that it's not there. You just kind of, it's like a veil and you can't quite see sometimes, or it seems so far away that I think you've just reminded me the importance of really coming together, and not only health as in, I don't know, going for a walk. Yes, that's healthy, eating good food, that is healthy, but also just like well-being for us to connect human to human, eye to eye, touch, sound, hearing each other, experiencing emotions together. Yeah,
I think I'm just going to touch a little bit on the projecting yourself sort of thing. I'm a real big feeler of vibes. And you know, like when you're projecting yourself in such love, people you walk past feel that shit and they'll smile at you. And they're like, oh, kia ora, you know, because you're giving off such an amazing vibe. When you're off, and most of the times when you're off, people that are close to you feel it more than people that don't. But when you're off, generally your output, your vibe frequency is really, really low. And those that are close to you will notice and go, everything okay? you know, because I'm not feeling like you're in a good space today or whatever. And also that whole gut feeling, your intuition, those sorts of things. So when you're kind of vibing at a high frequency, everything's in alignment, you're good. You know, you're kind of like, yes, nothing can really stop you. You almost feel invincible. But yeah, when you're projecting like that, you know, it's a ripple effect, and it really does have an impact on the people that are around you. You know, like when my husband's in a foul mood and he's walking through the household, oh hell, like the whole house can feel it, and your house feels dull. But when we're all good, when we're just chilling and everything's good, you know, the house feels warm, it feels safe, it feels comfortable. So yeah, I'm just a real big, you know, when I talk about projection, it's that kind of stuff. You almost project the light, your aura. I don't know, I'm gonna sound a bit weird, but you know, you're seeing colors, you know, around people, and how they're vibrating on those different frequencies. Sorry for fun, that don't get down like that, but that's how I get down. And if you're not vibrating, I'll know about it. And you know, just on one of the points that you had around with unity comes health, it's such a massive thing. I don't think people see in that space, but when we become divided, and it happens a lot, and I'm not too sure why it happens within our people so much, however it does, when we become divided, it's almost like we're in competition with each other, and that doesn't help our people at all, because it's making them feel like they have to choose. And that's not a good space for them to be in, you know. For me, when it comes to mental health, we need to give them every opportunity that we can give them. If there are five different shops that they need to visit, then they need to visit five different shops. If they only need to visit two, then they only need to visit two. But if we're shutting down another shop in order for our shop to get more people to come in, and we're not actually fixing their problem, then we're causing them more damage. And that's how I see that. You know, when it comes to people like the DHBs and stuff, everyone's sort of up in arms at the moment, and this is a very touchy subject within our DHB. But, you know, they're closing down, and they don't see how uniting with another DHB to become a bigger DHB is going to help their people. It's like, well, actually, someone from across the way might have a way that works better for our people, so why can't we just do both? Just that perspective, things like change don't scare me. They sort of make me take a deep damn breath and step into that unknown space. Everyone's fearful of losing mahi, income, financial spaces, and that I understand that completely. But for me, if it gives us opportunity to have more things available to our people, then we can't be going wrong, if that's what the ultimate outcome is. That's, yeah, by unity, that's what I sort of mean, you know. Ihu mātou, we all came together for that space, you know, that was Māori, that was tapu, that was, you know, that was the most unity within our people I've seen for a long time. You know, when we had that separation of Māori party and another party and another party, I was like, oh, heka, why we got so many parties for? I thought we were all striving for the same thing. But yeah, it just seems to be a reality check sometimes that we're not all on the same waka. That's okay. But all our waka can be striving towards that same outcome.
That's beautiful, really beautiful to hear someone speak about it with so much love behind, you know, like you can really feel your intention. And I know even those who are listening, like you can't see her face, but I see you. but there's a real, almost like a longing in your voice to like want the better, like you want better for us as people, as a community. And just before we like finish up, because this is something I don't understand in terms of like suicide, how can we, obviously this is a huge answer, but just based from your own experience, because I don't want to speak to the grief part, rather like how, what have you learned from your brother?
Ooh, that's a big question and a big answer. what I've learned from my brother is, I suppose a big one for me was that I learned that you can't carry weight on your own. You can't be everyone, or everything for everyone. And this is me giving myself my own advice as well. And also that you need to speak, just talk. We don't know what we don't know, and we can't help you if we don't know. You know, maybe I might not have all the answers, but you gather those that are really close to you and you can have those conversations. Maramataka I have learnt is times within Māoridom, there are times to wānanga and sit together as a whānau, and there are times that you need to go out and do the mahi. So looking at our maramataka, they were big indications for our Māori whānau on when and when not to step outside those spaces. We've lost that over time. We're slowly reclaiming that and bringing that back into this time, this hour. And I suppose he was a big stickler for, or a big turning point for me in learning about those spaces and just understanding that our men just, you know, yeah, they're strong, but they're not everything. And us as wahine need to be a little bit more giving in that space. And we need to give balance instead of forever putting weight. We're just adding to the weight of that person. So, yeah, I suppose that's what I've learned. I've learned a lot about myself from my brother in terms of not talking, taking on too much, trying to be a superhero when I'm not, and learned a lot about our people and where we're all at right now. You know, we're in a pretty funny space. We're in a space of movement and growth. But we've also got a lot of healing to do. And I don't say healing like kumbaya stuff. I mean like real, like learning yourself, learning who you are and being all goods with that. If kumbaya works for you, then all good. Like I'm not downing it at all. But we all need different things right now. And I suppose for me, learning about our people was quite significant in my health space because I saw people differently. I didn't see them from a clinical point of view at all. I saw them for, oh shit, there's some stuff here. Yeah, I'm here to check on your baby, but nah, sis has been crying all night, what's up? You know? So, yeah, he's taught me a lot and he's still teaching me.
Thank you so much for just sharing. You know, it's only like a tiny, probably 2% of your whole story. And it's only like just social media, we're only giving like small fractions. But I think the wisdom you're able to gift all of us today from such experiences is something many of us can relate to, you know, because you are speaking from experience. It's something that you had to embody, that you had to feel. And now you're finding the words to now express. So people like myself, like really, your stories really touched me today, to actually sit and reflect and go back, you know, and reevaluate and question things sometimes. You know, sometimes we don't know everything, and people like you can kind of stop us in our tracks and take the time to think and reflect and be like, cool, maybe there is another way. Maybe I can have a conversation a different way. Maybe I can pull that person up and be like, yo, are you okay? Because I'm feeling something off with you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for carving this time out.